With that, I'd like to introduce our 45-minute speaker, Jason V. from Ojai.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason, I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be clean and sober today by the grace of God and the program of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new and you're thinking about walking out of here, I want to tell you one thing. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. It's the best thing that ever happened to me, ever. Wow. You know, and if you're new also, like, you know, we're saying stuff like, keep coming back and we're glad you're here. And man, like, that was the last thing I wanted to hear when I first came in here. I'm all, you know, hey, maybe you're happy I'm here, but I'm not happy to be here. You know what I mean? And like, I hear this, you know, hey, if you want what we have, do as we do. I'm like, okay, you want to assume I want what you have. That's cool. But like, maybe I don't. You know, so there was a lot of questions. I was very resistant to what was going on here, you know, because like, I'm not the kind of guy that belongs in a church with crosses and stuff. That's not me. You know, I run from places like that because I'm afraid and like, I'm guilt ridden, you know, I'm paranoid because when I'm getting loaded, you know, to feel like I'm okay just to even wake up, I got to drink a beer or take a shot or something. And then immediately after that, I'm thinking about some other outside issues that I want to get a hold of. You know, that's how it is for me. You know, because upon awakening, when I was out there, the first thought in my head was, oh my God, I hate you, God, for allowing me to wake up. I don't even want to be alive. I don't even want to breathe anymore. How could you do this to me? You know, and just to find a way to get through the day, I had to have a drink. Towards the end, that's what it felt like for me. You know, I was born and raised in Santa Barbara. My dad was a construction foreman. My mom was a receptionist. I have two little sisters. How the story kind of starts out for me is, you know, I'm about 6-7 years old, and I have a step relative that's touching me and doing stuff to me that is inappropriate. And this guy threatens my life every day. He's put a straight edge razor to my throat. He's told me if I tell anybody, I'm dead. So I got nowhere to turn. I got nowhere to go. And alcohol is really the only answer for me. You know, so how I'm introduced to alcohol is through my dad. So my dad one day looks at me and says, hey, guess what? You're not going to school today. I'm all good. And he's like, you're going to work with me. I'm all, okay, yeah, cool. And so, like, you know, I'm about 6 or 7 years old. My dad, you know, my dad says, you know, let's go. My mom's still dressing me and appropriately decides to put me in sandals and shorts to go to a construction site, right? So I'm feeling really comfortable, seeing that when I get there, everyone's wearing pants and boots and stuff and drinking Budweiser. And I'm like, whoa, okay, I guess at work, you know, hey, dad drinks this stuff at home all the time and he gets to drink it at work. That's pretty cool. I wonder what that stuff is. I don't know. It's like water or something, but like they seem to be feeling better when they're drinking it. That's all I notice. Everyone seems a little looser. You know, they're having fun. They're cracking some jokes. And I'm sitting there with my dad, and they're digging out this giant septic tank out of the ground with the crane and stuff. And there's these guys that jump in the hole right afterwards. And it's about like it looks like about a good 30 feet down, you know? And my dad goes, hey, come over here, man. He's all, you're going to get down in that hole. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Did you not notice I'm wearing sandals and shorts that mom put on me? Thank you, mom. You know, great. And I was thinking some pretty nasty things at that point, but my dad, he's so angry at this point. He's looking at me like, oh man, you know, and he can't even like bear the sight of me. And so the whole day transpires where I'm just sitting there on this rock and he just keeps giving me dirty looks and he's drinking more beer and blah, blah, blah. 5 o'clock rolls around. He disappears and then pulls up in this dump truck, kind of kicks the door open and looks at me and says, hop in. And so I get in the dump truck. And he's got some tall boys. There's like a 6-pack, but there's a couple missing. And he goes, you embarrassed me at work today. And just backhands me and my head. I kind of like fly back and hit my head on the door. And I got, you know, my nose is bleeding. I think my mouth is sewing, and I got blood all over my t-shirt, you know. And like, I kind of knew that was coming because that's how my dad sort of handled things with me. You know, sadly enough, that was how he felt like he wanted to be with his son. Looking back on that, that's sad. But nonetheless, I'm like, all right, so what's next? And he decides to open this beer and he hands it to me and he goes, hey, you can take a shot like that. You can drink this. And I go, oh, that's tough. All right, let's try this, you know. So I'm curious. And I drink it. And within a few minutes, man, I'm just kind of like, ooh, hey, I don't like the way that stuff tastes, but it kind of takes the sting off a little bit. Hey, I feel a little relaxed, kind of like those guys that are drinking and I see on my dad's work site. Hey, I like the way this feels. I'm going to drink more. And so my dad took off and left me in the truck, so I drank it. And I was like, whoa, I kind of like want to drink another one. And it felt pretty good, you know. So from that point on, that kind of set the hook in me. And so whenever I was, you know, like whenever I could get my hands on it, when it was available, I would take it. So when my old man had some in the refrigerator, I'd steal it. When I went to my buddy's house, I wanted to see what they, hey, you got any soda in your refrigerator? And I'm looking for beer. I'm looking for alcohol, you know, check the liquor cabinets. You know, I want that stuff because it makes me feel good. And I like it. I don't like the flavor, but, you know, I'm dying on the inside. I don't even want to be here. You know, I got this freak touching me. I don't like that. My family life is a nightmare. I can't even, like, I want to be a good student, but I can't even do my homework because my family is just so messed up. And, you know, I come kind of like from this long line of men. There's not really any role models in my family. And like this long line, I'll kind of tell you about, there's alcoholism and drug abuse in my family. It goes way back. You know, my grandpa, I love him, but there's a big problem with him. He's in Folsom Prison. He goes to San Quentin first when he's young, and then he gets out, and then he goes to Folsom Prison for some serious crimes. And so I get to go visit him at Folsom. These are the men that are in my life. Then I have another uncle who's in the biggest motorcycle gang in the whole entire world. And that's the other guy that I kind of look up to. And my dad, who's like kind of like this beatnik, kind of cholo guy, who hangs out with car, you know, bunch of car guys, motorcycle guys too. And my dad, he works hard, plays hard, likes to drink, likes to do drugs, likes to fight. So I just kind of think that's what happens with men. Is like, okay, well, you go to jail, you fight, you ride motorcycles, you fix cars, and you treat women poorly because that's what my dad does. And that's what all these guys do. That's what I see. So monkey see, monkey do. That's how I kind of like go through life. So my dad sets the bar really high for me. And here's the things that I, you know, he just says to me, hey, okay, look, don't get anyone pregnant. I'm like, okay, I probably could do that, maybe. Don't go to prison and graduate from high school. So I barely graduated from high school. So I'm like, all right, cool. I did that. So I got one down, right? And then I haven't got anybody pregnant yet, so that's good. And, you know, the rest of it, I just moved through life drinking and using drugs. And it's, and like, I feel good and it's fun when I'm doing it. And to think of life in any other way, shape, or form is just like impossible for me, you know. So what ends up going on is I graduate from high school and I work and I get this junky job like flipping burgers and stuff. And all I do is work to earn money so I can get high and loaded. That's all I want to do. And I don't have any plans. I don't have any goals. And I think the most prevalent thing that's going on in my life is that, like, I'm dying on the inside still because of all these old wounds of when I was a young kid. And I'm in a lot of pain. And I secretly want to kill myself. I'm not going to admit ideation because I don't want to go into a facility. So I'm going to lie and say, no, I really don't want to kill myself. But, you know, I'm depressed. I have depression, you know. And, you know, I can't figure out what's wrong with me. My parents can't figure out what's wrong with me. My family can't figure out what's wrong with me. And I can't figure out what's wrong with them, you know. So nothing just can really, nothing can fall into place, you know. And so I get these jobs and I start going out to bars. And I have this really weird relationship with my dad where, like, I hate the guy, but I kind of love him too. I'm kind of enamored with him in a weird way. And like, I would never admit it at the time, but like, I'm seeking his approval. And so I start to go out to bars with my dad and I drink with them. And I start to get in fist fights and I start to do a lot of stuff that I think is going to impress him. And it never really does. He kind of like barely even knows I'm there. But I'm sitting next to him the whole time. And, you know, at this point, like, I know he's an alcoholic. And I can see that I like to drink, but I don't see any kind of real connection, you know. And I don't have any spirituality. And so, like, the thing that's awesome that I learned here is when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I finally get here, which is a pretty long road, I get introduced to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and I get introduced to the doctor's opinion. And like, that's the thing I want to read, man. Because like, I don't care what you all think about me being like, whether you think I'm alcoholic or I'm a drug addict or whatever. I care. I need to find out from like a professional, and that's the guy who gives it to me. He tells me, he talks about, I suffer from a spiritual malady. I suffer from an obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body. When I drink, I'm an alcoholic. The phenomenon of craving kicks in, and I can't stop drinking. And I learned that from members of Alcoholics Anonymous as well, but I like seeing it in that black and white from a doctor. That impresses me. Although, like, prior to that, lawyers, doctors, that's not impressive to me, but I want to know about this stuff. And so I find out about that when I finally get here. And how I get here is by drinking with my dad and getting in fights. And I'm kind of like a thief, but not really, because I'm involved in these activities. I mean, like, I'm not the guy that walks up and puts the stuff in his pocket. That's not me. I mean, like, I want your stuff, you know, like, because like, all your stuff's way better than mine. Like, I mean, like, you're all dumb, right? Like, when I'm getting loaded, you're all dumb, but you got stuff I want. Like, your chick's always hotter. Your booze tastes way better than mine, and your drugs are way better. And like, your car and all your stuff's nicer, and I want that stuff. And so like, I'll be your best friend or tell you whatever you want to hear so I can get that stuff, because I'm sneaky. But like, you're not going to catch me red-handed, because I'm not going to really steal it in front of you. I'm going to do it behind your back when you're not looking. That's the kind of guy I am. But like, these crimes that I'm talking about are like, you know, I'm cruising around with these guys, these degenerates, and I watch them break into people's houses and into garages, and I'm the lookout, so I can take off if the cops show up. And that's what I do. When they show up, I'm like, hey, I'm out of here, man. Go, gone. Because, like, I can't go to prison because my old man told me, you know, I'm not going there. You know, I'm not going to end up like my grandpa. And so that's pretty much how I roll. And, like, if you really want to like get a good visual of the kind of dude I am, really, this will lay it out completely. Is that I'm the guy that lives with his mom still, and I'm a motorcycle guy, right? But to see, there's one really, really huge problem with that. I don't have a motorcycle. Like, I got the helmet, I got the leather jacket, I got the boots, all that stuff, but no motorcycle. That's me. I'm that guy. And like, I was that guy for a really long time. But like, so 30 pops up, right? I turn 30 years old and I get this great idea. I'm sitting in the bar with my old man. We're listening to some cool jazz. There's like, it's this bar that my dad hangs out at. I call it like the dinosaur burial grounds, because there's a bunch of old people there, you know, a bunch of blue hairs. And at that time, I was like the kind of dude that liked to make fun of old people. Now I'm getting a little gray, so I don't do that anymore. But, and so we'd sit there and listen to jazz, you know, and there was a waitress that I thought was kind of cute there. And I'm like, hey, Dad, check this out. What do you think of that girl right there? I think I should marry her. And he's like, that sounds like a good idea. And like a couple months later, I married that girl and we went to Las Vegas, right? And I got married there. My dad was there and like some of my friends. And like, it like was never going to be, like it felt good to get married, but it almost felt like we were both like forcing it to happen. I remember like kind of hanging out in the honeymoon suite. We're about to go down and get married and stuff. And we're like all looking at each other like, should we really do this? Like, and we're like, well, we invited all these people. That'd be so embarrassing to not do this. So let's do it. You know? Okay. So we did, you know, and that's pretty much how it went down, you know? And then like it was drinking and getting high after that, you know? And so you can imagine how this marriage turns out, you know, like, it was a lot of drinking, a lot of getting loaded, and it was just drinking at first, but then drugs kind of entered the picture. Like, we stayed home and drank together a lot and sometimes went to bars, but then, like, we got involved with this group of people that were just animals, man, and, like, we started hanging out with them, and then it was just, like, we drink, and there was always drugs involved, and then all kinds of weird stuff started happening, and I ended up, like, we'd go out together and, like, separate and disappear, and, like, I wouldn't see her for, like, a couple of days, and I'd have to call my friends and be like, hey, what's up? Hey, was I with you? Who was I with? What did I do? Is there blood on my car? Where's my car? What's going on? Like, that was like how it started to get every day. And like, that's when I started to think, oh man, like, well, this is kind of like starting to look like my old man right now. Like, I never want to be that guy, but I feel like I'm starting to like act a lot like him. I'm starting to kind of connect the dots and see some similarities, and I'm not digging it. I'm really bummed out, you know? And so anyway, at this one bar that I'm with all these animals at, there's this little guy, this really small guy who was super annoying in high school. I always wanted to like choke him out, man. Cause he just like a little dude with a big giant mouth, man. I was also pissed cause he had a nice motorcycle and I didn't. And so we were at the bar one time and of course, I'm on my motorcycle stuff with no motorcycle, but his motorcycle's there, you know. And we're at the bar, and I'm like, hey, I haven't seen you in a long time. What's up? Let me buy you a beer. And he goes, I don't drink. And I was like, what are you hanging out with us for then? What's wrong with, you know, what's up with that? I don't trust people that don't drink, you know. You're like probably a narc or a cop or something, right? This happens a few times. And then one of those times he goes, I don't drink, I'm allergic. And I kind of chuckled. I was like, and you can imagine what I was thinking, which I won't say in here because of numerous reasons, but out of respect for the group and myself, I'm not going to say it, but I'm thinking this like, what a, you know, but like that sticks with me, the allergy thing. I'm allergic. Whoa, what's that? I've never heard of that. I've heard of people being allergic to bee stings, peanuts, whatever, but not alcohol. And I was like, whoa, that's a big problem. And I'm glad it's not mine, right? But like, things kind of cycle forward and again, just forgetting I'm married, your stuff looks good, I like to get high and drunk, and then all that combination just lands me on the rocks, man. You know, like I got so much guilt and shame. You know, I'm the idiot looking for, you know, I'm the dude that still has no motorcycle, looking for my car, wanting your stuff, you know, and obviously like I'm hollow on the inside. I'm hollow, you know, and I don't know that, but now I do, you know, and that guy, he was cool. Like, even though I kind of made fun of him, he's all, hey, man, if you ever find that you have a problem with drinking, you should talk to me. And I was like, okay, allergy and you should talk to me. And I think I got the drinking problem, you know. I think that's going on. And I always want to get high when I'm drunk. So, all right, I'm going to talk to this guy. So I invited him. I called him up on his phone, and he came over on his motorcycle. And he parked on my front lawn, which was rude, but whatever. And he came with one of these things. It was a small version, you know. The young man's version. This is the old man's version. But, yeah, and we sat on my porch, and he was like, so you want to ask me some questions? And I said, yes. hey, when you used to drink, did this used to happen to you? And he's all, yeah. When you used to drink, did you used to wake up in weird places with weird people? He's all, yeah. So I'm not liking how this is going, you know? And I see the book, I'm all, is that a Bible? What's that? Oh no, God again, this God thing. And then like, I don't have one. Maybe you do, but I don't, you know? And I really want to get a motorcycle still, but I don't have one, so. And things will get way better once that happens, right? Because I want to fix my inside problem with outside stuff. You know, like the girls and the gambling and the alcohol and the money and the stuff is going to make me feel better. But see, the problem is I could just take that stuff and throw it down that hole and just go, there's no bottom, dude. It's endless. It's like an abyss. And I tried to do that for so long. And so I'm talking to this guy about alcoholism and it's starting to look like maybe I'm alcoholic. And so I'm like, hey, you got some gas in your motorcycle? He's all, yeah. I'm all right, man. Well, thanks for coming by. You should bounce. You should take off. And so he's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's cool. And he handed me that book. And he goes, here, this is for you. And inside of it, he wrote, Jason, make a go of it, Fred. And I took the book and I threw it on my dresser. And I kept doing what I had been doing for a really long time. Because I wasn't really ready to change my life, man. I couldn't even imagine that. I couldn't see it. I couldn't see a way out. And I thought I had a way outlived my life plan, you know, because I was thinking I'm probably going to croak in my early 20s. I'm not going to make it. And here I am in my 30s. I'm like, whoa, I don't know what to do. You know, I still got no goals. So a seemingly bad thing happens. My friend Al always talks about the seemingly good, seemingly bad. This cool old dude from Santa Maria that shared a lot of cool stuff with me. And the seemingly bad event happened of getting kicked out of the house by my wife for probably numerous offenses that I probably don't even really remember. Remember little snippets of it, like little edits of like, ooh, I did that? Wait, who's that? I don't know. Where was that? When? I don't know. But, and I'm sad. I'm sad because now this person's leaving my life and I don't know what to do. And I still kind of like want to kill myself, you know. And so I just go on the run of like all runs. All there is left for me to do is just to try to make this thing work still. So I'm going at it really hard, man. Like I'm drinking and using all kinds of cocaine. And I get to the point where I can't even move. I can't get out of bed. And I look over in that big book sitting on my dresser. I still have it. I like threw it around the house. But the good news is, I'll show you the good news. The good news is I did finally get a motorcycle. That's the good news. Because in the divorce, I got some money and then I bought the motorcycle I always wanted. So that was the one, that was like an awesome thing. It was a kind of like my grandfather used to race before he went to prison. So that was awesome. That was like the one awesome thing that happened. And so I'm like, what am I going to do? I can't move. I wish I had a gun and I would just stick it in my mouth and pull the trigger right now. But I think I'll call this guy Fred because I don't. And so I called him on the phone and he said, hey man, there's a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. It's at a church. It's Friday night. It starts at 7:30. I'll pick you up at 6:30. And so, I think we had to be there at 7:30 because he had a commitment, whatever that is. And so he said he'd pick me up. And so it was in the morning. And so like, you know, I drank a bunch of water, had some lunch, some food, and feeling a little bit better by 5 o'clock. Things are kind of changing. Not wanting to go to that meeting so much anymore. Because like my favorite bar, that dinosaur burial ground, is downstairs. You know? And I call him up and say, hey, I'm not going to go. And he's all, no, hold on, man, no. Be outside on the street. I'm picking you up. And he hangs up the phone. I'm all right. Well, I already committed to go with them, so I'm going to go. So I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was almost exactly like this. Almost exactly. There were people here, lots of cookies, food. There were some cute girls. Everyone was smiling. Everybody was friendly. Everyone was introducing themselves, exchanging phone numbers, and it looked like fun, man. It really did. It looked like fun. Except for, like, I know y'all are getting loaded. You have to be. It's all, you guys are faking it, you know, and I'm just here for the cookies, and I'm going to sit in the back and make fun of people, and that's pretty much what I did. And until he told me, hey, Jason, shh, that's disrespectful. And so I sat there, and I was cool, and I enjoyed the meeting. And there was a guy up at the podium, kind of like me right now, a little older, but had a big old ring and was talking about all that stuff, man. Like, keep coming back. And if you want what we have, do as we do and work the steps. And he talked about how the steps saved his life. And that was about all I got out of it. He was doing a lot of talking, and I wasn't doing a lot of listening. And like, had the traditions up here, which is some rules to live by. And I was like, I don't want to do that. Steps over here, I'm like, don't want to do that. That looks like a lot of work. Probably can't do it. They're like, well, get a sponsor. Get a home group. And so I went to this one meeting. It was called the Junkyard Dogs. It was a men's stag. And it had kind of a scary name. And I thought I'd see a lot of degenerates there. Probably some ex-cons and some other seedy types of people there. So I was kind of like a little bit scared. But I'm like, oh, okay, I'll go to this meeting with Fred. So I go to this meeting, and it was like really solid. And there were a bunch of guys there that were really serious about Alcoholics Anonymous and really serious about the steps. And they sponsored guys. And this group was strong. And they did a lot of H&I. They went to jails and institutions. They were all about helping people, man, and saving lives. That's what they wanted to do, man. And I remember sitting in there, man, I just lost it. I was crying, man. I finally, like, came to the realization that I was dying on the inside, you know, and I was tired of living the way I was living, you know. But, like, that didn't stop me. Like, I got a sponsor, and I did steps 1 through 4, was about to do a fifth step, and my sponsor says this to me. Hey, mate, because he's English. Hey, mate, me noticed that your car is not parked where you live. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's all, at night, I see your car over here, then over here, over here. I know what you're doing, mate. If you don't stop doing it, you're going to get loaded. And I'm like, wait, man, like, doesn't the book say we are not the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct? I think that means you, right? And he's like, I'm just telling you, that's the experience of the group, mate. If you keep living how you're living, you're going to get loaded. And so sure enough, that's pretty much what happened. I went out to Las Vegas thinking I was going to stay sober, and I didn't. I got drunk because someone challenged me to drink a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I walked away for a minute, and then he called me some more names, and I just took a sip because I didn't want to be called names, and then I was off and running again, and that's how it happened. Boom, like that. But this is the beautiful thing that happened, is when I went to that home group, a bunch of people took my number, and when I went out, they started blowing up my phone. So I'm sitting at the bar, and my phone's all, burr, 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 and I'm like, who's that? I don't know this number. Who's this dude? And it's like, I wouldn't answer, but I checked the message, and it'd be like all these guys from the Junkyard Dogs. Hey, man, where are you? How come you're not at the home group? Blah, 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 blah. You know, and that ended up being that thing that saved my ass, saved my life, were those phone calls that kept coming. And I'm like, these guys, okay, it's a cult. What's going on? Like, now I'm really scared. I'm paranoid. Like, they're following me. They're watching me. Hey, leaving these messages like, hey, I saw you hugging the curb the other night, man. Like, you better come back. And I'm like, you know. And I was still dying on the inside. It was the same old thing, man. Like, I was just beating it to death. And so that beautiful thing happened. And I remember it was interesting because that English sponsor who, like, reached out to me at that home group, he was related to this guy that owned this English pub. And I was sitting at that pub one night And I was drinking. I swear I was in this bubble. Like, no one even knew I was there. Even the bartender was looking at me like, what are you still doing here? Like, get out of here. And he came up to me behind me and, like, put his hands on me. And he said, hey, mate, are you doing okay? And I said, I just looked at him right in the eyes and said, yeah, I'm great. I'm good. And then his wife came in, who knew me as well, gave me a hug. I lied to her, looked her right in the eyes and lied to her. And I couldn't handle that. I was like, okay, I'm still a liar. I'm still basically a thief. I'm acting exactly like my dad, and I'm bankrupt. I got nothing to offer anyone, you know? And that was it. That did it for me. And I called that Fred guy again. He answered. He said, you know what to do. And so I went to a meeting, but I was scared to go in because, like, I thought you guys were going to ridicule me and laugh at me and make fun of me. But that never happened. Like, there was this guy that just showed up, and he I don't know, somehow God in the room or around or whatever, he just looked at me and said, hey, are you all right? And I'm all, no. And he said, are you all right? I said, no, I'm afraid, man. I'm afraid to go in here. He's like, why? I said, I'm scared. And he goes, hey, come on. And he just put his arm around me and we walked in. And, like, I saw people in there I knew when I got in, and everything was cool. Nobody made fun of me. Everybody said, hey, Jason, it's good to see you. We're glad you're here, you know? And again, that thing, when I walked in, what I heard in my head was, if you want what we have, do as we do. And so that started on August 23rd, 2005. I went back to the rooms, and I got a sponsor. His name was Andy. And he was an old Cholo dude who had been at Soledad for a long time. And I picked him to sponsor me because I used to see this guy wobbling around drunk in Santa Barbara, but he looked totally different now in the rooms. He was a totally different guy. And also, I was a little bit scared of him. So if he said, hey, do this, Jason, I'd do it. I wouldn't argue. Because I didn't want to mess with him. So that's exactly what happened. But I had to, like, practically beg the dude to sponsor me. And I really did. I had to ask him like 3 times before he'd give me an answer. But once that happened, once he said he would work with me, I called him one time because he told me to call him every day. And see, there was a whole set of protocol that I had to follow in order to be sponsored by him. I couldn't talk during the meetings. I had to, like, get here early. I had to get 3 or 4 commitments a week. I couldn't play on my phone. I was only allowed to, I had to stay totally away from women. I couldn't even talk to them at all. Because they said straight up to me, like, hey, you ain't got nothing to offer any of these girls, man. And they didn't come here to meet you. They told me that too. So I was feeling pretty good about myself at that point. But so much for the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, right? But anyway, no. And I'm glad. I'm really glad that I found a group like that that was rigid about recovery and a sponsor that really hammered down on me and forced me to go outside my comfort zone to change. You know, because it's all about change. And so I worked the 12 steps with that man. He took time out of his life, out of his day to guide me through the 12 steps. Because really, his job as a sponsor, that's what it is. You know, he had a working knowledge of the 12 steps. And I had to be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous for him to sponsor me. And that's what I was. I just did exactly what he said. And all the guys that I wanted what they had, I started to copy them. I went to the same meetings. I started to dress like them. I started doing exactly what they did. And so what ended up happening was my life changed as a result of working the 12 steps. I started getting involved in H&I, and I was doing all kinds of stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was trying to be of maximum service to God and to my fellows, like the book talks about. And so what happened was, a huge thing for me was, there was one particular woman that I really liked, but I kind of kept that a secret for a while. And then I got, like, right around 8 months, and I remember, I didn't tell my sponsor, but I told my friends, a bunch of guys at the Junkyard Dogs, about this woman, right? And that's exactly what I heard. They're like, have you worked all 12 steps? No. Okay, you need to get at least a year. Who's the girl? Well, her name's Lindsay. Leave her alone. Don't talk to her. Stay away from her. Okay. So that's what I did. I stayed away from her. You know, because I was taught men stick with the men, women stick with the women. I sponsor men, I don't sponsor women. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, it's just not how I do it, not what I learned. I try to take a non-judgmental stance on that kind of stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous and in my personal life. It's just something I don't do. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. But, and that was a good thing that I didn't ask her out when I had 8 months. And so I got a year and I started going to this one meeting and she was a secretary and I asked her out and we started dating and there were like all these specific rules to doing that too because they're like, you don't know how to treat a woman. You have no idea. We're going to show you what to do. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go out on a date. You're not going to kiss her. You're not going to touch her. You're going to listen to her. You're going to have coffee. You're going to have a good time. And you're going to go home. And that's it. And so like they taught me how to date this woman in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't know. Because I didn't know how to treat women. I was horrible at that. So you guys taught me how to do that. The men in here. And the women teach me that as well. So I don't like exclusively go to men's meetings because I want to hear what women have to say as well. Because they teach me stuff. And God to me is, I'm non-denominational. To me, the thing that I practice is a philosophy. It's not really a religion. God to me has no gender. It's just some sort of an energy. And that's as good as it gets for me. Like, because it was really thin, man. I was like the doorknob dude when I came in here, you know? I was like, whatever, man. Shoelace, doorknob, bottle cap, whatever. Like, I just need something. I need a God, you know? And like, that's the best thing that ever happened was finding a God in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous allowed me to find a God of my own understanding that wasn't related to some sort of denomination. Thank God for that, because if I would have had to have been Christian or Islamic or Hindu or whatever, man, like Catholic, I would have never hung out. I would have left. I didn't want no part of that stuff, you know? But so thank God for that for me, man. And like whatever your God is too, I endorse it. I'm happy for you, man. I'm just happy you have one. And you know, and I have friends who go to church, and I'll go with them, man. Like I'm all about just participating in stuff that's positive. So I got involved in H&I really a lot once I'd worked the 12 steps. I have this great new wife that I married from Alcoholics Anonymous. We bought a house together. We had a kid. Life's unimaginably good. I feel good on the inside. I have found something that fills me on the inside. And I never had that before. Like, I was so grateful to have found something like that. I thought I was going to be dead in my 20s. I get to live. I get to be a husband. I'm a good husband. I get to be a father. I'm a good dad. I get to coach my kids' soccer team. I get to show up at all my kids' events and functions. I get to be a sober man in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example of Alcoholics Anonymous, good, bad, or indifferent. You know, I'd like to think it's good. I want to be good. I want to be better. My sponsor forces me to go outside my comfort zone to change, to grow. Discomfort for me has always, at least in the last 12 years, has been this pattern of kind of suffering at first, but then reaping the benefits of the hard work later. And realizing that for me to grow, I have to come into some sort of pain or discomfort. Otherwise, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to change. If I can just kick back and be comfortable, I'm not going to do anything different. You know? So my sponsor has made me take actions that have allowed me to change and grow and become a better human being, a better member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have a motorcycle anymore because I'm more interested in being a father. I want to live to be a father because riding a bike's dangerous, straight up. It is. And, you know, I rode my bike for like 10 years all the time, had a couple close calls, and it was like, hey, man, like, I haven't gone down yet on the road. And I'm just going to wrap it up and call it a career done. And I had a lot of fun doing that. It was a fun part of my life, you know. I like to wrench on motorcycles and build them and all that stuff, and I had a great time doing that. But for me, man, what I want you to know more than anything else is that this God that I found here, this energy that I'll call it, because I don't want to get... The book talks about God as being a him. I know women don't dig that, and I don't really dig that either on the gender thing, whatever. Like, God just is, man. It's not a gender, you know? It's like, for me, it's an energy, and I love that energy. It makes me feel whole. It makes me feel like I'm a valuable human being today. And I've gotten to sponsor many men in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've gotten to be a part of a lot of people's recovery. I worked at a detox for a few years. I've seen a lot of things. I've seen some phenomenally miraculous things, changes go on in people's lives, and I've seen some tragic, tragic events. I've seen some of my friends die, and it's been really, really painful. And I've seen some people do exactly what I did, work the steps, get married, have a baby, grow, change, get promoted at work, have an awesome life, man, based on these 12 steps, man. It's really, it's like, it's simple. It's not, the program's simple, it's not simple to do, but it's simple. And I have made lifelong friends in Alcoholics Anonymous, man, that love me and care about me. Those guys that blew up my phone, they still blow up my phone. We're friends, you know? We're close, we're tight, we're a tight-knit group of guys who want to help people, who care about life, not just ours, but yours too. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous gives me, and hopefully you too. Oh, by the way, I used to have the parking lot commitment here for like 7 years. And I get to stand up here today wearing a tie. It's awesome. So I love this group. I love the dude who started it. He's with a good friend of mine. And don't park in the dirt field out there. They don't like that. Thanks.
We need a parking lot commitment person to show up. Another round of applause. I've asked Kristen to come up and read a vision for you, and then we'll close out in the usual manner.
I'm Kristen, alcoholic. A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation that you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.